Idaho opened his mouth to speak, closed it without making a sound. Of course! Siona, too, was Atreides. The thought shook him. He had known it, but he had not accepted it. Siona was some kind of a rebel whose actions were almost sanctioned by Leto. The limits of his permission were unclear, but Idaho sensed them.
You must not harm her, Leto had said. She is to be tested.
Idaho turned his back on Siona.
You don't know anything for sure, he said. Bits and pieces, rumors.
Siona did not respond.
He's an Atreides, Idaho said.
He's the worm,
Siona said, and the venom in her voice was almost palpable.
Your damned oral history is nothing but a bunch of ancient gossip, Idaho accused. Only a fool would believe it.
You still trust him, she said. That will change.
Idaho whirled and glared at her.
You've never talked to him.
I have, when I was a child.
You're still a child. He's all of the Atreides who were, all of them. It's a terrible thing, but I knew those people. They were my friends.
Siona only shook her head. Again, Idaho turned away. He felt that he had been wrung dry of emotion. He was spiritually boneless. Without willing it, he began walking across the square and up the street to where the boy had gone. Siona came running after him and fell into step, but he ignored her. The street was narrow, enclosed by the one-story stone walls, the doors set back within arched frames, all of the doors closed. The windows were small versions of the doors. Curtains twitched as he passed. At the first cross street, Idaho stopped and looked to the right where the boy had gone. Two gray-haired women in long black skirts and dark green blouses stood a few paces away down the street, gossiping with their heads close together. They fell silent when they saw Idaho and stared at him with open curiosity. He returned their stare, then looked down the side street. It was empty. Idaho turned toward the women, passed them within a pace. They drew closer together and turned to watch him. They looked only once at Siona, then returned their attention to Idaho. Siona moved quietly beside him, an odd expression on her face.
Sadness, he wondered. Regret? Curiosity?
It was difficult to say. He was more curious about the doorways and windows they were passing.
Have you ever been to Goigoa before? Idaho asked.
No.
Siona spoke in a subdued voice, as though afraid of it.
Why am I walking down this street? Idaho wondered.
Even as he asked himself the question, he knew the answer.
This woman, this Irti, what kind of a woman would bring me to Goigoa?
The corner of a curtain on his right lifted, and Idaho saw a face, the boy from the square. The curtain dropped, then was flung aside to reveal a woman standing there. Idaho stared speechlessly at her face, stopped in a completed step. It was the face of a woman known only to his deepest fantasies. A soft oval with penetrating dark eyes, a full and sensuous mouth.
Jessica,
he whispered.
What did you say?
Siona asked. Idaho could not answer. It was the face of Jessica resurrected out of a past he had believed gone forever. A genetic prank. Muad'Dib's mother recreated in new flesh. The woman closed the curtain, leaving the memory of her features in Idaho's mind, an afterimage which he knew he could never remove. She had been older than the Jessica who had shared their dangers on Dune, age lines beside the mouth and eyes, the body a bit more full.
More motherly, Idaho told himself. Then, did I ever tell her who she resembled?
Siona tugged at his sleeve.
Do you wish to go in to meet her?
No, this was a mistake.
Idaho started to turn back the way they had come, but the door of Irti's house was flung open. A young man emerged and closed the door behind him, turning then to confront Idaho. Idaho guessed the youth's age at 16, and there was no denying the parentage. That caracool hair, the strong features.
You are the new one,
the youth said. His voice had already deepened into manhood.
Yes.
Idaho found it difficult to speak.
Why have you come? The youth asked.
It was not my idea, Idaho said.
He found this easier to say, the words driven by resentment against Siona. The youth looked at Siona.
We have had word that my father is dead.
Siona nodded. The youth returned his attention to Idaho.
Please go away and do not return. You cause pain for my mother.
Of course, Idaho said. Please apologize to the Lady Irti for this intrusion. I was brought here against my will.
Who brought you?
The fish speakers, Idaho said.
The youth nodded once, a curt movement of the head. He looked once more at Siona.
I always thought that you fish speakers were taught to treat your own more kindly.
With that, he turned and re-entered the house, closing the door firmly behind him. Idaho turned back the way they had come, grabbing Siona's arm as he strode away. She stumbled, then fell into step, disengaging his grasp.
He thought I was a fish speaker, she said.
Of course, you have the look.
He glanced at her.
Why didn't you tell me that Irti was a fish speaker?
It didn't seem important.
Oh.
That's how they met.
They came to the intersection with the street from the square. Idaho turned away from the square, striding briskly up to the end where the village merged into gardens and orchards. He felt insulated by shock, his awareness recoiling from too much that could not be assimilated. A low wall blocked his path. He climbed over it, heard Siona follow. Trees around them were in bloom, white flowers with orange centers where dark brown insects worked. The air was full of insect buzzing and a floral scent which reminded Idaho of jungle flowers from Caladan. He stopped when he reached the crest of a hill where he could turn and look back down at Goigoa's rectangular neatness. The roofs were flat and black. Siona sat down on the thick grass of the hilltop and embraced her knees.
That was not what you intended, was it? Idaho asked.
She shook her head and he saw that she was close to tears.
Why do you hate him so much?
He asked.
We have no lives of our own.
Idaho looked down at the village.
Are there many villages like this one?
This is the shape of the Worm's Empire.
What's wrong with it?
Nothing, if that's all you want.
You're saying that this is all he allows?
This, a few market cities, on. I'm told that even planetary capitals are just big villages.
And I repeat, what's wrong with that?
It's a prison.
Then leave it.
Where? How? You think we can just get on a guild ship and go anywhere else, anywhere we want?
She pointed down toward Goigoa, where the thopter could be seen off to one side, the fish speakers seated on the grass nearby.
Our jailers won't let us leave.
They leave, Idaho said. They go anywhere they want.
Anywhere the worm sends them.
She pressed her face against her knees and spoke, her voice muffled.
What was it like in the old days?
It was different, often very dangerous.
He looked around at the walls which set off pasture land, gardens, and orchards. Here on Dune, there were no imaginary lines to show the limits of ownership on the land. It was all the dukedom of the Atreides.
Except for the Fremen.
Yes, but they knew where they belonged, on this side of a particular escarpment, or beyond where the pan turns white against the sand.
They could go wherever they wanted.
With some limits.
Some of us long for the desert, she said.
You have the Sarir.
She lifted her head to glare at him.
That little thing.
1,500 kilometers by 500. Not so little.
Siona got to her feet.
Have you asked the worm why he confines us this way?
Leto's peace, the golden path to ensure our survival. That's what he says.
Do you know what he told my father? I spied on them when I was a child. I heard him.
What did he say?
He said he denies us most crises to limit our forming forces. He said, people can be sustained by affliction, but I am the affliction now. Gods can become afflictions. Those were his words, Duncan. The worm is a sickness.
Idaho did not doubt the accuracy of her recital, but the words failed to stir him. He thought instead of the Carino he had been ordered to kill.
Affliction.
The Carino, descendant of a family which once had ruled this empire, had been revealed as a softly fat, middle-aged man who hungered after power and conspired for spice. Idaho had ordered a fish speaker to kill him, an act which had aroused Mineo to a fit of intense questioning.
Why didn't you kill him yourself?
I wanted to see how the fish speakers performed.
And your judgment of their performance?
Efficient.
But the death of the Carino had inflicted Idaho with a sense of unreality. A fat little man lying in a pool of his own blood, an undistinguished shadow among the night shadows of a plastone street. It was unreal. Idaho could remember Muad'Dib saying,
the mind imposes this framework which it calls reality. That arbitrary framework has a tendency to be quite independent of what your senses report.
What reality moved the Lord Leto? Idaho looked at Siona standing against the orchard background and the green hills of Goigoa.
Let's go down to the village and find our quarters. I'd like to be alone.
The fish speakers will put us in the same quarters.
With them?
No, just the two of us together. The reason's simple enough. The worm wants me to breed with the great Duncan Idaho.
I pick my own partners, Idaho growled.
I'm sure one of our fish speakers would be delighted, Siona said.
She whirled away from him and set off down the hill. Idaho watched her for a moment, the lithe young body swaying like the limbs of the orchard trees in the wind.
I'm not his stud, Idaho muttered. That's one thing he'll have to understand. As each day passes, you become increasingly unreal, more alien and remote from what I find myself to be on that new day. I am the only reality, and as you differ from me, you lose reality. The more curious I become, the less curious are those who worship me. Religion suppresses curiosity. What I do subtracts from the worshipper. Thus it is that eventually I will do nothing, giving it all back to frightened people who will find themselves on that day alone and forced to act for themselves.
The Stolen Journals.